Welcome to the KP Podcast, where we talk about the business of real estate, a podcast about leveraging opportunities, growing your business, and experiencing financial freedom. Here are your hosts, Keith Anderson and Peter Kamboukos.
All right, everybody, welcome to the podcast. I'm here with our co-host Keith, and I am Pete, and we're coming to you from the KP Studios here at the Forum. So, Keith, we got something here today that's, something that comes up now and again with our agents, with our clients.
Yeah.
And it's something that's been kind of going on more so, I would say, in the last, 4, 5, 6 years or whatever it's been here. But it's something that's changed a little bit in this landscape. And before we get into it, just let's always remember what we say all the time. Real estate landscape continues to change. It's constantly changing, right?
I feel recently it's been changing more of a, what do you call it, monthly, maybe quarterly mindset. And it's daily sometimes. And it's been a wild year. We're really looking at this year, over the last 6 years even, I would say it has changed more this year, a little tail of last, maybe over the last 12 months rolling, than I think it's had in the last 6 years.
Yeah. Well, and a lot of that's been, I would say for the good, some of this has been, we've been lagging behind some other industries. But in any event, today we're talking about one specific area, like we said, that comes up quite a bit, and that is iBuyers.
And how
do iBuyers affect the real estate market?
And how they're destroying our marketplace, right?
Is that what's happening?
I don't know. Is it? I think that's a common thing to think about is, I've seen a lot of threads out there. I've seen a lot of posts. I've seen a lot of conversations about a common thought process for most agents is iBuyers are taking our business. iBuyers are disrupting our market in a way that is irreparable. iBuyers are an issue and they're taking our commissions. I've seen a lot of different threads.
Sounds like a lot of fear going on.
There's a lot of fear and a big amount of scarcity mindset. But then I've also seen the other side, the flip side of that coin is iBuyers are healthy for the market. iBuyers help the consumer receive a better transaction, a better deal. iBuyers, remove the shady investor from the market. I've seen a lot of those on all different sides of the coin. And I think in a way, there's some truth to every side of the story, or there wouldn't be 100% those stories still floating around.
Little bit of truth and all kinds of all parts of that, huh? So, well, let's...
Where are they?
Let's get into, I guess, before we get into some of those details, let's make sure we're all on the same page and go, what are iBuyers?
I think it's a key to understand because, they differ greatly. They're not all the same.
Right.
There's a certain concept around them for the most part, a certain focus, but literally they're all vastly different. There's only probably a couple that follow the same guidelines, but then there's 4 to 5 outliers that have their own twists, their own pull to differentiate themselves from the rest of them.
Yeah. And they're, like you said, there are different models out there. I think, for simplicity for today, let's focus on some of the big ones. Probably the ones, I would say the three biggest ones that everybody probably knows that are more national. And they work similarly, but yes, there are variations. There's a lot of variations in it. But with the iBuyers, what we're talking about is instant buyers, right? And these are something that we've seen, like we said, over the last 4, 5, 6 years, as far as the large players coming in, because, instant buyers and iBuyers technically have been around forever, in one form or another. But the change that we've seen is these institutional iBuyers that have entered the market into, the large metro areas, large real estate markets across the country here, like I said, at varying time frames, but let's call it generally in the last, 4 or 5 years plus. And, what we're talking about here, and we'll say, some of the names that most people are familiar with, the Open Door, your OfferPads, your Zillows, for example, those are going to be like three of your largest, national ones. They're going to be similar. They're not exactly the same, obviously, but they're similar. And, these are companies that are making, just like the name says, instant cash offers. They're usually saying, hey, no closing costs, no repairs, no nothing. Here's my cash offer. Choose when you want to close. Just quick and easy, right? Convenient, right? Right?
And I think part of that to keep in mind is they advertise such as no closing costs, no fees, none of this stuff. But it's not necessarily that specific. They're just going to give them their final net out the door. Like that's what's really key is that they're advertising, hey, our purchase price is going to be, let's say, $800, but we're going to charge these fees and this outside thing. So don't worry about the purchase price. You don't need to worry about that. The good news is you don't have to pay commissions. You don't have to do all this stuff. And your net walk away outside the door is this price. And so their goal is a clean, simpler, final approach to say, hey, if we're charging $800, you're walking away with $785, let's just say.
Yeah.
Then you know $785 is what you get. You put that in your pocket and you walk home with it. And so the consumer can look at it and say, oh, I know I'm netting $785. And then I can take with that money what I will. They don't have to worry about a lot of the stuff in the open marketplace now where it's like, hey, our purchase price is over $800. But I got closing costs, real estate commissions, all this thing, and it can get a little cluttered, if you will.
Yeah. And so I think the important thing to talk about with all of this is they serve a function in the marketplace, right? A legitimate function. This is, you know, there's trade-offs, but they do serve a purpose and a function. You know, you're giving up something to get something else. There's no free lunches out there, right? And so if you're looking at these alternatives, you get. And I think for the most part, most of them are not trying to hide it. Mm-mm. They tell you what you get. You're going to get convenience. You're going to not have to show the house. You're going to not have to worry about inspections and repairs. You get to, you know, choose the date you want to do it. There's no loan provisions. There's all of these convenience factors that go in with it. But in order for that ease and convenience, what you're giving up generally is top dollar because you're not going to market. There are trade-offs, but like we said, they serve a purpose in the market. But I think more importantly for the audience that we're talking to is, Keith, are they your competition?
Well, and here's the hard part is I would probably, I'll give you a percentage factor of competition. If you're not leveraging their programs, then I would say yes, in a certain extent. I would say they're probably more like 20% competition, not 100% competition. I'm not going to bat with their listing agent and myself in a room. So they're not that type of competition. They do offer a service that's different than mine if I'm not leveraging what they have to offer. And we'll get into that a little bit later. But if I'm trying to pair myself against them, right, as a listing agent, if I go on this listing appointment, I'm going in the door and I say, hey, Mr. and Mrs. Seller, let's sell your house. I think we can get this. I'm going to be offering them a top dollar perspective. Mm-hmm. I can't offer them the convenience perspective that Opendoor or OfferBat or Zillow will offer them. So I'm offering top dollar as my offer at the table. They're offering convenience with still a great return. Like that's kind of the mindset. So it really comes down to what the client wants. And if I'm fighting other realtors for that experience of top dollar, those are my direct competitors in the same product field that I'm at. If I lose a listing to an Opendoor and OfferPad or Zillow or some of those other places, honestly, that's on me because those programs offer great incentives for agents. But they were going to go that route anyways because they weren't buying my product. They were buying convenience. So in their mind, convenience meant more than the top dollar price. I wouldn't have got that listing either way, right? Because they valued that higher.
And that's what I look at it is they're not direct competition. No. It doesn't even make any sense when we have certain agents that say like that, you know, they're taking listings or business from you. It's like, I'm not sure what you're doing. You know, I don't know. Like you said, it's a different product. Now, that doesn't mean that, like you said, we can't work with them, leverage that, take advantage of that. Because ultimately as an agent, you know, you should be helping your potential client, whoever you're meeting with here, figure out the best thing for them. And sometimes, you know, one product's the best thing for them or one service versus another service. And it's kind of like, you know, this kind of just, I'm thinking about this as you're talking there. It's almost like, you know, if you have somebody that is looking for a new car, a new vehicle, let's say, and you've got, you know, you're coming in and you've got the sports car. Okay. Yeah. So you're pulling up in the Porsche right here. And then someone else is pulling up in the pickup truck. Well, technically, they're both vehicles.
Yeah.
But they serve very different purposes, right? If somebody's got a construction business and a need for this pickup truck, well, the Porsche isn't going to do them any good. You know what I'm saying? Even though they're both still cars. And I don't know if that's the best comparison, but you know, the point is like they're different versions, they're different models.
I got even a I think a better following that same path. Hey, we're a car show now, guys. And so we're going to pull down this way, but taking that same path, I have my vehicle that I'd like to sell. I have two routes to go about that, both offering very vastly different purposes. I can go into a dealership and get rid of my car today.
Yep.
Walk out with cash on hand, a new car, whatever, today.
Trade it in.
Yep. I can trade it in. Am I going to get top dollar for it?
Nope.
No, I'm not. I'm not going to get the highest price. So I can do that, but I get to walk away from my car in an instant, mm-hmm. an hour, two yep. hours tops. Or I can list my car on various sites and use maybe help or friends or social media. I can put in the extra time, the effort, and the work for it. And I can sell for top dollar, but I'm inconvenienced with my time. And it's the same concept of listing your house and, you know, selling to one of these iBuyers. So I would say it's more like that. If someone's looking for top dollar, they're not going to trade in their car.
Right.
They're going to go to a private opportunity. There's that trade-off. Now, if someone could care less about top dollar and they want to sell it quickly and efficiently, or maybe have their car for a little longer, in essence, it's they're going to go that route. So it's the same thing. Convenience is vastly different. Now, that being said, who are they actually affecting? And I think we're in this conversation right now. Let's jump into it. Who is the true competition, Pete, of Open Door, OfferPad, and Zillow? Who's actually being hurt? Because if you're an individual agent, trust me, you're not being hurt from them. You're not. If you're being hurt, there's other factors involved.
In fact, I would argue you can use iBuyers to your advantage. You get even more business.
You could get more listings and force them to sign. Again, we'll talk about this in a little bit.
Yeah.
But who is the competition that is getting hit right now from those guys?
It's other investors. It's the small investors, I would argue. It's the small independent investors who have to compete with them because essentially, you know, they're offering a very similar product, if you will. Yeah. So I guess, you know, to piggyback off your analogy there, it would be, you know, the small mom and pop independent car dealer.
Jim Bob's pop shop.
Right. Trying to get that trade in versus going to a big, you know, a Carvana or somebody.
Chevy dealership or whatever.
Yeah. Big national dealer who's got, you know, all the bells and whistles, everything dialed in, you know, well-funded, whatever, you know, tons of locations on and on and on.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's who they're competing against. That's who is their true competition is they're offering, you know, more of an institutional level. And that's why we say what's been different is these big platforms that have come in, these big national well-funded players that have come in. Not that they're doing a new product, but they're doing it in a slightly different way on a much bigger scale and competing against those smaller investors. So yeah, that's who's getting
with more marketing dollars and more advertising behind them. So here's my
more technology. My go do it on your phone, you know,
and get it for yourself.
Right.
And as the consumer gets smarter and smarter, and we see more millennials and other people coming into the market with more tech experience and more marketing, you know, seen by them. They're going to reach out to these private investors or these big ticket investors way faster. So I think the spot in the market where it's really getting eradicated is the wholesalers. And I think this is the big reason why. And a private investor could still find the consumer at the point of ready to do a flip or sell it off market and still earn that business. It's a lot harder for them now because the easy deals are gone. The home runs are starting to fall away for them. The big margins aren't there. And the problem is wholesalers, that was their thing. They would go in and try and get it as low as they possibly can and then turn it to an investor. But in order for that to happen, there has to be room there. Whereas with Open Door, OfferPad, and Zillow, the consumer knows they can go directly to those resources and get literally the highest investor priced offer possible. You can't go to an investor. And I'd probably argue.
There's some. I mean, you know, you don't know. You can have an independent investor that's going to give them more.
Tight margins. But I would say more times than none, you're going to have these big companies probably give them a better net when it comes to walking out the door because they have smaller margins to deal with. They don't have to worry about the fix and flips mentality as much because they have these big giant contracts with these huge contractors. They've got
ancillary businesses, cheaper funds than some of the
investors. They make money in more places than just on the flip, whereas an investor has to have that overhead turn to profit. And it's a harder margin to hit.
They've got some economies of scale and other businesses that go along with it that helps them, you know, like you said, make up for some of that, especially in an environment where we've got really tight inventory right now.
So,
you know?
So a big part of this is as well as one that I would want to bring up. In what we see, when things are loud, they seem big, right? They seem massive. They seem to scale, like, oh my gosh, these guys are consuming the entire marketplace. Mm-hmm. They're all over the place. Like, I can't even, all of them are just crushing it out here. I see their listings everywhere. You know, when they're in sight, they're in mind, and you're going to see them more and more. So that being said, Pete, what percentage of the market do they actually make up? Like, if you really think about this right here, like, if they're everywhere and they're affecting us and they're true competition to what we're trying to do, how much of the market are they making up? 50, 50%, 45?
Keep going.
40? Where are we sitting? Go on.
No, total between total. All of them.
The iBuyers in general. Good estimate.
So, right. Between all the big ones, obviously, we don't know about independent investors. We don't have those numbers. But if you look at all the big national platforms, like the ones we've talked about, so we can look at, we know the numbers roughly here in the Phoenix market. They make up about 5% of the market. 5%.
1/20th. Which in the grand scheme of things is a big number, because the Phoenix metropolitan area is massive and we're selling hundreds of thousands of homes every year, or sides, if you will. And so that being said, 5% is, that's a lot of homes over the course of a given year. However, that's still only 5%. So that means there's 95% of the inventory being traditionally sold in some form or fashion differently.
Yeah. I mean, to put that in perspective too, with a different one, you know, I mean, some of the, these are numbers that are even harder to figure out, but some of the numbers that have been floated out there before, you know, for Airbnb and VRBO short-term rentals, for example, in Scottsdale, you know, there are estimates that that's 5% of the whole entire home market in that city. And so, you know,
that's not even on the market.
Right. So we don't know, but that kind of puts it in perspective, you know, it could be those short-term rentals make up about 5% of that market. So kind of something to kind of compare it to and wrap your mind around, if you will. But, you know, I think one of the things that we're talking about as with this is, how do you use this as an agent to your advantage? You know, what can you do? Where do they fit in with your business? And I think, you know, whether we're talking about these particular iBuyers or a different version, it's a very important part that you should be incorporating into your business, because at the end of the day, like we said, what we're doing when you're going out there and meeting with these clients, you should be helping and presenting, you know, what is going to end up being the best solution for them and giving them options. And so here's one of the things that Keith and I always talk to our team about. You should change the conversation and change the question to not should you work with me, but which one of these options is best for you. And so, you know, you want to go in there and help these potential clients figure out what is the best option for you, because now you are a resource. You're bringing these solutions. You're bringing multiple solutions, whether it's, you know, list the house with me, sell to an independent investor, go with an iBuyer. I mean, you know, we're with eXp. They've got their own iBuyer program in there too. So you can bring a ready offer and say, here, we've got an offer in hand, right? When we meet with you, you can talk about, you know, listing with you and go into the open market. And in some cases, and we won't even get into here, you can go there with three or four options. And that really starts to change things.
Yeah. Right? I think, again, and we touched on a little, but it's about changing the conversation. It's about changing the outlook of the buyer. It's not about whether they use you or not anymore. It's about what option they choose and how they're going to leverage your services and your knowledge to help them get their goal. Remember, we've talked about this on previous podcasts and other trainings. Every single client either has a problem that they need to fix or a goal they want to obtain. And if you are the solution to no matter which direction they go, guess who's getting the business? It's you every time. You provided the solution and they're happy.
Right.
If you have to pin things up against each other, that's where it becomes bad. And I think it's very funny, and we see it a lot in our marketplace and a lot of things. When you come to the table, and if you're a listing agent out there and you're the one bad mouthing these big companies, guess who's going to immediately go after your appointment to check these big companies out? It makes sense. When anybody talks bad about something else, people want to figure out, why are they talking so bad about them? Why is my agent terrified of this company?
So I'll tell you this, a little anecdote. Okay. And I'm not going to name any names. This isn't in the real estate industry though, but it literally, Keith, this just happened yesterday. I'm listening to another podcast.
Okay.
And I won't give any names. It's in the financial world. And these
season 142 episodes. No.
These two guys are on there and they're bad mouthing this other, you know, financial provider, let's call it, whatever it is, right? And so won't get into the details, but you know what the first thing I did when I was done listening to that podcast?
You Googled it.
I Googled that and I go, what's going on over there? Why are these guys badmouthing it so much? What's happening? Because I want to know.
And have you noticed that when people start badmouthing a certain company, why does the company's profits climb? Why do things get better? Why do people use
the
service?
What are you scared of?
Because at the end of the day, sometimes bad publicity is good publicity if they're not really doing anything to harm anyone. Their objective is of good standards. So, and I've talked to people high up in Open Door and high up in these different companies, and I've talked to them and I've said, hey, what's your objective? What's your purpose? What's your vision? And it's always the same thing, to provide the consumer with a better experience. Their mission is consumer focused. So why would I not want to put that tool in my toolbox when I go and present to a client? I want my client to be best served. And as an agent, my job is to provide them every tool possible to best serve them.
Right. Cause you can still help guide them through with any, you know, any of these iBuyer services, regardless of what company it is or independent investor or whatever it is. You're still the one that can help them out, help provide that service, help guide them. Ultimately, you're the one that can still help this client and make sure that they get what they need.
And the beauty of it is, guys, if you're worried about your commissions or being paid, they offer lots of compensation opportunities for us as agents to refer them. So it's not like they're stealing our commission or stealing our money. Let's take that away from that mindset away and start to remember that if we want to be the best agent out there for our clients, we have to know everything that's possible out there for our clients and help them find the best solution. And if we're worried about just individual dollar amounts on certain things, then we're not helping our client. And if we are starting to worry about the big picture, our client gets served. And at the end of the day, guess what? If you don't have that scarcity mindset, your bank account is still bigger than when you started that year.
So one thing I'd like to touch on, though, before we kind of wrap this up there with them is, you know, we've seen this very tight market, very low inventory. You know, we've finally seen, I know most of these iBuyers have what they call their buy box, and they're in there and it's got to fit, you know, property's got to fit in this certain criteria. Well, we've seen that, I would say all of them have been expanding that, right? Yep. And going, you know, going up to different price points, areas maybe they didn't want to before, and changing different things. So, and I don't know, because this is speculation at this point, but you know, what happens if the market turns? Well, you know, what happens with these guys? I mean, do they keep going? Do they get hurt? Does that change things for, you know, the people out there? I mean,
let's throw a scenario out here, because it's always fun to try and speculate a little bit about what would happen. If we turn and become more of a buyer's market, let's, right now we're 30 days or less supply all the time. Like, it's just ridiculous out there. If we move to 3 months supply, does that help the iBuyer or does that hurt the iBuyer?
It depends.
Maybe.
Know, that's the biggest answer. So, because it depends on, you know, things like what's happening with their funds, you know, what's happening with the interest rates.
Does the money
rates
move as quick?
Right. Does the money move as quick? Do they have a bunch of houses now sitting on their books that they can't get rid of? Because you go, okay, well, maybe now they can tighten up that buy box and go back in there and do that. But even if they find the stuff they want, but the market's slowing and they don't have the buyers, you know, are they going to be carrying 1,000 homes, 2,000, 3,000 homes on their books? You know, how long can they do that?
Yeah.
And so there are scenarios in there, we'll see. And you know, does that affect the overall market? Because if you've got some of these larger companies that are holding huge amounts of homes, at some point they might have to get rid of them. Now, certainly we're nowhere near anything like that, but you don't know what could happen in the future. There are scenarios, like I said, maybe, you know, it comes down and the things just slow down. Gradually rates stay low and, you know, that environment improves for them. So who knows?
Because in essence, if the buyer's market, or if it shifts closer to a buyer's market, maybe not all the way, then in essence, they probably have a better chance of picking up more listings, because listings are having a tougher time selling if they're rougher or in rougher shape. So that's when the investor market starts to flood back in, is people right now. You could throw a shack on the market and it's selling. Like, we've talked about that. Yeah. Houses that I've never even thought that a family would want to buy are becoming more desperate in certain situations and are buying it because they know that they can make it work. 3 years ago, or even less, those houses wouldn't have sold. They would have sat on the market. They would have had to take price reductions, et cetera. And so now, if a market moved that way, an iBuyer or the general investor population would come back into the marketplace and say, hey, I'll take it off your hands right now, cash. You don't have to worry about when it could sell.
Yeah.
and we'll flip it. And it would sell quicker once it's flipped. So in my opinion, I think that as long as it doesn't go full buyer, like that's the key. If we're not back to a 6 month on market where good houses are sitting, that's the key. If great houses still sell, but you know, but if great houses start sitting, that's in my mind a worry for an investor marketplace, because even if they flipped it up and made it gorgeous, their returns can become smaller and they have a lot of competition. So,
we'll see, but it's certainly something to think about, because we didn't have the large institutional players that, you know, last go.
Market's
around,
different now.
Yeah. We also had a lot more supply.
Yeah.
So, in any event, so guys, at the end of the day, you know, like we said, make sure you don't have that scarcity mindset out there, and, you know, figure out how to work with investors and iBuyers of all sorts and present more options to your clients and help you get more business, you know, with this, and go out there and use the resources and the other companies and things that are available to you to keep growing your business and keep helping everyone.
Cool. Awesome, guys. We're excited that you guys were able to join us this week. Lots of good stuff coming up over the next few weeks. We're going to be traveling all over the country as well. Got some good stuff that we are excited to be able to share with everybody. But like always, follow us on YouTube, The KP Elite. We'd love your guys' support. And leave us a review here on the podcast or on whatever platform you're listening to. Please give us a 5-star review. It would really help us continue to grow the platform. And we appreciate all of you guys as well. So we look forward to seeing you guys in a couple weeks.
See you guys.